we wanted to work with the brands because if they're making it even easier for their customers to engage in pre-loved, and it might even be customers that haven't even used Vinted or eBay or Depop before, like people who couldn't be bothered to upload their items because they couldn't be bothered to take photos, upload information about their pieces, like it's just not part of their daily life and they just don't have time. If we can help them to engage, then we're actually bringing a significant proportion of the population back into the circular economy and engaging as well. So I think brands have a big role to play in this.
Hello, everyone. Emma here, your host of the Interline podcast. This time on the show, we're talking to Lydia Hartley, the co-founder of Continue. Continue is a B2B software as a service startup on a mission to help retailers become more circular. Their technology is intended to help brands create their own peer-to-peer resale marketplaces with the goal of driving revenue growth, acquiring new customers, and reducing their carbon footprint. The company has prioritized simplifying the journey towards circularity, recognizing that many brands and retailers are still daunted by the concept, and the added complexity of integrating technology can make it even more so. With her skill set of marketing, fashion, and technology, as well as being a young woman in the UK, where overconsumption is particularly problematic, Lydia provides a refreshing perspective on what it will take to scale sustainability. Lydia and I get into why resale is an opportunity not to be missed by brands and retailers, how they can use it as a way of growing their businesses, the way that Continue is working to meaningfully and positively influence consumer culture, and the pragmatic steps the fashion industry can take to get to a technology-enabled, more sustainable future. Over now to my conversation with Lydia. Hello to all of our listeners to the Interline podcast. Today, I am thrilled to have Lydia Hartley, the co-founder of Continue, here on the podcast. And it's really been a while that we've been trying to get this in the calendar. And I'm so glad that we have Lydia on now. So welcome to the show, Lydia.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Emma. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today. And yeah, long time coming, so glad we could finally get it in the calendar.
Absolutely. So let's get going by talking a little bit about your career and your journey to co-found and Continue, and a little bit about how you came to be in this position that you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, had a bit of a squiggly career up until this point. So after university, I started working in advertising agencies when I first got out of university, working with varieties of different fashion brands. I've always been really interested in fashion and how fashion brands can essentially market to their customers and really kind of change behaviours, and worked with a range of different luxury brands there. Then I moved into the tech business actually, and worked for a company called Darktrace, which again, it was very, very different to what I was doing in media agencies. It was like cybersecurity, but set up partnerships with F1 teams like McLaren, the British F1 team. So I've always been really interested also in like partnerships and that way that businesses can work together in order to drive awareness for each other and grow for each other's businesses. And yeah, kind of, I've always been in that sort of like marketing space. But yeah, working in tech, I've always been really interested in, because you can obviously drive huge amounts of change, and it was the fastest growing sector at that time, and all very exciting. But as I said, always had a real big interest in fashion, and particularly sustainable fashion. Like when I was at university, I loved using Depop. I was always kind of, yeah, it was one of those Depop and eBay were really, catching fire and really kind of holding the hearts of younger people, and just really got into that. And I didn't fancy myself going into the traditional fashion industry, because I felt like it was a little bit toxic. Like I didn't really agree with a lot of the practices that are still around today, a lot of them, and kind of the body image stuff and like all of these kind of like different values. Like it didn't really align, but I really liked the nexus point between tech, sustainability and fashion. Like that really interested me. And whilst I was working in tech, I actually started running these clothes swapping events as a hobby, and that was basically when people would come in, bring clothes that they wanted to swap, and yeah, basically using your clothes as a currency to get new ones, just because a lot of young people don't have much money but they have a lot of clothes, so trying to kill two birds with one stone. And then lockdown happened, couldn't do the events, and decided to launch and like kind of set up my own platform for clothes swapping, and did that very scrappily, and use all the money I saved from lockdown to do that. And it basically just grew, and I actually went full time with that business after lockdown, quit my job. And a lot of that was driven by TikTok and all these basically, it's like uni students and like teenagers just buying, like, yeah, just basically engaging. And I got accepted onto a startup accelerator called Techstars, got VC backing for that business, and grew it to about 10,000 users, but found it tricky, the kind of the business model around clothes swapping. It's hard to monetize because when you're swapping clothes for clothes, you know, at what point do people pay for that experience? So kind of like was rethinking what to do with that and what to do next, because I was a solo founder, always looking for technical co-founders, and because I wanted to be part of a team and really building it with business partners by my side. It's a hard journey at the best of times. And I basically met my two co-founders, Harry and Richie, who were building Continue already, and obviously Continue, very similar space whereby, yeah, essentially more helping fashion brands to enter the whole pre-loved space and driving change and circularity from that perspective and that approach. So I got on really well with them, and they were technical, and I basically just decided to pivot slightly away from the kind of swapping B2C approach to the problem and more towards actually working directly with the brands who have all the data and all of the information about what we're purchasing, to essentially utilize that to enable people to engage in pre-loved in a much more accessible way and a lot more, you know, it's a lot more streamlined. So essentially we're now working particularly with SME brands to launch their own pre-loved marketplaces, and it's almost like a mini Vinted but attached to their websites, and it's completely white labeled so it looks like the rest of their website. And basically, we were solving a problem, which is a lot of the biggest brands in the world have their own pre-loved marketplaces. I mean, Shein even has their own pre-loved marketplace. Zara has it, like all the massive fast fashion brands and luxury brands as well are really getting into this. But there's a real gap in the market where SME businesses, who make up, I think it's about 70% of the market, didn't have a solution whereby they could also launch their own pre-love initiatives in a very easy, cost-effective, logistically light way. So that's what we're basically building and we're aiming to do. And we went through a bit of a pivot recently, but we relaunched the business in April and have onboarded 14 brands since then. So yeah, things are moving quickly and fast, and there's a lot of excitement and energy around the space, and really excited to be part of it basically.
Yeah, it's great that you're coming from this place of, like you said, marketing, fashion, sustainability and technology, because I think you have the vision, and then you could find some technical people who maybe also had a bit of a vision, but I think your skill set and what you had an interest in is really probably what drove Continue to be what it is today. So congratulations, 14 brands is a lot actually. So great.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, yeah, a lot of solo founders are either one or the other in terms of like their skill set. And I think I had one of my mentors from my last business say, oh, like, it's just so good to see you not running around so much like a headless chicken trying to do everything and just focusing really on what you're good at and letting the others do the rest of it. So I thought that was always, yeah, good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a part of that is you're doing this thinking kind of for brands. And I'm just going to throw a stat out there that the resale industry is going to reach £140 billion by 2027. And there's a real compelling chance for brands to integrate pre-loved items into their business model. And it really is going to be a missed opportunity if they don't. So a big part of getting into that is understanding the approach and how to talk about it, how to frame it. So how do you think, in your experience and also what we've just spoken about, how should brands be thinking about tackling or going for this opportunity, tackling this problem, however way you want to look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's tremendous how much growth there's been in the resale industry. And it's growing, I think, now three times the rate of the traditional fashion industry. So it's just such a massive opportunity for brands. And I think historically brands, and still now, to be honest, like there's still a lot of work to be done in some cases, but they have really shied away from even thinking about pre-loved because, I mean, a lot of people will know that it's a hard time for retail. Like, you know, a lot of businesses are struggling. Everyone's putting everything on sale. No one's buying full price. And a lot of these brands have kind of been like, no, let's just focus on our core business. We need to put all of our time and energy into that. Meanwhile, resale is skyrocketing. People are reselling their clothes all the time. And, you know, even these brands, I mean, our sweet spot is serving brands who have between, you know, 1 million to 300 million in annual revenue. And even the brands that have 1 million in annual revenue, they have thousands of items on Vinted and other platforms as well. And it's just, why would you ignore this when your customers are literally doing this activity and you're not part of that conversation? And there's just so much that's happening post-purchase now that brands need to be thinking about because times are changing and it doesn't just stop when someone buys something anymore. They don't just send it to charity and they you know, throw it away or anything like that. Like a lot of, and particularly younger consumers are really being savvy about the way that they are consuming clothes, you know, post-purchase in terms of getting rid of it, but also acquiring new clothes. And we say to brands a lot of the time, it's like, you know, your customers are doing this anyway. And it's an activity that, you know, it's a powerful one. It's very meaningful in terms of they are engaging with other people around them to essentially, yeah, to obviously get rid of their clothes, but also passing them on in a meaningful way. And we talk to brands a lot about positioning and how they want to talk about this. And a lot of the time, actually, the conversation is now about retention and about loyalty. And the reason being is that brands can now utilize resale. And obviously, and our model is a peer-to-peer resale model. So we basically launched their own like a mini Vinted, so their customers can resell their items via the brand's marketplace in a very easy way. Once they're done with them, so they'll sell it to another customer. So that like the brand doesn't have to handle any of those logistics. Like it just goes between the customers again. So it's reinforcing this community element. But we, as part of our service, we can basically offer customers the opportunity to take store credit when they sell their items, and which obviously they can go and spend within the brand and in their ecosystem. So it's really about keeping them within that ecosystem, keeping them as loyal customers, and thinking about, you know, how can we also talk to your VIPs? Like, are your VIP, because a lot of these brands, like, it's crazy how many items that their VIP customers, who are like their most loyal customers, have bought from them. Like, we work with a handbag brand called Sarah Harron, and some of her VIPs have bought 20 bags from her, and they're like a premium luxury brand. So it's like, how can we get these loyal customers really engaged, trading amongst themselves, really building up that community and that loyalty piece, and really building on that retention, which is so important in today's age, where especially like with Google ads, social media ads, like acquisition is so challenging in terms of being so expensive nowadays, and brands really need to build a much more sustainable business model whereby they are driving up their LTV, really holding on to their customers for as long as possible and keeping their VIPs happy. And it's also another way of just creating a new customer experience, which is going to surprise and delight their customers as well. You know, saying, hey, like, by the way, you can resell your items very easily via the brand when you want to, essentially. And offering that, I mean, it also goes alongside like repairs, for example. Like a lot of brands are doing repair services now, so they're helping their customers repair their items once, if there's anything that goes wrong. So it's another way of building up, yeah, that the kind of positive sentiment around the brand as well, and also, yeah, obviously appealing to the younger, conscious Gen Zers and millennials out there who, yeah, want to buy from brands who are doing better and are making efforts to do good. And it's very much a marketing play from that point of view as well. But from our standpoint, like, it's obviously a marketing play, but for us, it's also like a lot more down to like performance as well, and driving that retention for the brands. It's such an important piece of them right now.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great that you can explain that, because I imagine that brands have been fearful about the secondhand marketplace and how it would affect their first-hand revenue. And you've discussed a lot about the benefits of actually doing this. But do you, or have you had to speak to brands about what you've just told me and kind of telling the story of resale as a way of growing their business without having one vertical cannibalize another? So talking specifically about first-hand revenue, have you had to tell them, you know, these are all the benefits? It might eat into some of your first-hand revenue, but what's been your experience?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the number one objection that we find from brands and we receive during calls and first-time conversations is, oh, hold on, but what about if, you know, resales and pre-love starts eating away at my new sales? Like, you know, are people going to stop buying new? Are they going to stop buying, you know, at full price? Like, what's going to happen to my sales? Like, they really start catastrophizing. And I find it's always quite interesting because pre-loved for brands is still like a very small part of their business, to be completely honest, especially in the early days. So it's funny how brands really see this as like such a threat in terms of like involving it into their business, because it will take quite a long time for the brand, for customers to really start buying pre-loved as much as they're buying new if they're going to the brand's website. It's kind of crazy how the brands think it's going to have such a crazy impact, because it's still a small proportion of their business. And it's more, as I mentioned, a way of just introducing a new type of service and playing around with that. But when we talk to the brands, like when they say this sort of thing, we're just like, okay, but they're doing it anyway. Like, people are savvy nowadays. Like, they are going to these pre-loved marketplaces. So they'll go to your website, they'll find something that they like, and then they'll type it into Vinted to try and find it pre-loved. Like, that is like literally how a lot of people are engaging right now in fashion, because they know they can get a big discount on other platforms. They know that a lot of people are selling things new without tags, new with tags, you know, basically new, because people aren't buying things in a sensible way or a mindful way either sometimes. So why would you not want to own this whole experience so that you know who is buying your items pre-loved, so that you can, you know, retain them as a customer and eventually maybe sell something new to them and later down the line? So it's really about understanding who is buying your items. And, you know, a lot of the time as well, it's not just you know, the current customers who are wanting a discount, it's also aspirational customers to that brand. And that's where we're really seeing this with the luxury premium brands as well, is that, you know, younger consumers, they might not be able to buy it full price, so they might buy it pre-loved, but you still want to know who they are, because, you know, in 5 or 10 years they might be able to buy full price from you. So it's really about building up their audience and understanding their segments as well, and having that visibility, because otherwise they're losing loads of data along the way. And it feels like it's such a blind spot for the brands, and it's just, why ignore it? Why put your head in the sand, basically, when you could really have all of this knowledge about everyone that's engaging with your brand and buying it, even if they haven't bought from you full price before? So that's where we're really seeing it. And also, a lot of brands have dead stock items, sample stock. They're having, like, obviously massive clearance sales. Like, we're saying to them, why would you not just have one part of your website where all of this discounted kind of produce or merchandise is, and you can sell sample stock via the marketplace? You could obviously have pre-loved going on as well, and we've actually seen really good engagement with selling sample stock via the marketplace, because part of our marketplace is that customers can make offers on products. So it's, again, similar to other platforms out there, and we've actually found about, I think it's about 80% sell-through rate on sample stock, because customers like being able to make offers to the brands as well. So it's been quite an interesting insight, and it actually wasn't an intended feature necessarily, but it seems to be working really nicely, and the brands are seeing good results from that. So because a lot of brands are just sitting on stock at the moment, and eventually they're having to pay more money for that in the long term because they can't shift out their warehouses. So again, it's solving that issue for them as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I wonder, I'm curious, your position, obviously as a founder, and you care about sustainability, of course, you're also providing a business to brands. How do you feel about overconsumption? Because the UK, where you're from, is one of the worst offenders when it comes to overconsumption of clothing. And I often write about and I think about consumer behavior. I know I've changed my behavior so much since I've been in the fashion industry for the past few years. And, PwC is saying things like the primary mechanism for the fashion industry to tackle this problem is the introduction and scaling of circular business models, such as the resale of existing products. So how do you think the wider availability of circular and resale business models is going to affect consumer behavior? We've touched on it already, but is it part of the bigger picture? Does something else need to change? I speak to friends and some of them are just really unaware of all of this. I don't know. So what do you think?
Yeah, 100%. So it's a tricky one because you see people engaging in these secondhand platforms. And I think a big part of the reason why they're engaging is obviously they want to be more conscious, but the biggest thing is probably the discounts and the price point, especially in the current economic situation that we're in. So when we're looking at how people are engaging, but more importantly, why they're engaging, it is probably the price element, which is driving them the most, which is obviously meaning that behaviors in terms of the meaning behind them maybe hasn't changed as much as we like to think. And I'm just saying that bluntly, because I think it's a reality that we do need to think about and how we're going to change those behaviors and thought processes around how we're engaging in pre-loved and why we're buying so many items. And a lot of it just comes down to the meaning that we put on buying new things and how that makes us feel and giving us a dopamine hit, when we click, buy on TikTok or Instagram at a moment of weakness. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to cultural change and how we can really it's not just going to be a one silver bullet. It's going to come from multiple different angles in terms of the way that we approach kind of overconsumption and actually hopefully making it so that goes out of fashion and we can say, okay, but underconsumption is cool now. Like, how many items do you have in your wardrobe? Okay, my wardrobe isn't full of clothes and it's not like completely jam-packed. I've got so much stuff and I'm buying stuff all the time, yada, yada, yada. It's more, I've only got a tiny, capsule wardrobe that I'm really pleased with and it's just really quality pieces in that I'm buying less. And there's so many different like movements out there now, which is like, the rule of five, only buying 5 new items a year. I have a lot of people saying to me that they're not buying any new items anymore. They're trying to make the most of their wardrobe or they're only buying pre-loved. But I realize that I'm also in a massive bubble where I'm around people who are engaged in circularity and care about this whole conundrum that we're in, and a big conundrum at that. So I think it's really going to come down to the culture elements. How can we get influencers, like people of importance, to really push this narrative and really kind of also create this grassroots movement to, basically get younger people to really say, no, like this is not right. And this isn't cool anymore. Like, we don't want to consume as much. So I think it's a tricky one, because with resale, I think it's going to contribute. And I think it's really helping that also the brands are encouraging people to engage. And that actually, this is another big point that the reason why we started the business is we wanted to work with the brands, because if they're making it even easier for their customers to engage in pre-loved, and it might even be customers that haven't even used Vinted or eBay or Depop before, like people who couldn't be bothered to upload their items because they couldn't be bothered to take photos, upload information about their pieces, like it's just not part of their daily life and they just don't have time. If we can help them to engage, then we're actually bringing a significant proportion of the population back into the circular economy and engaging as well. So I think brands have a big role to play in this. And also, I guess, like, the utopian vision is that if we can bring circular propositions and new ways of doing things into these brands, we can essentially help them to make money from circularity so that they don't have to produce it as much in the first place. And I think it's really, if we boil it down, it's the overproduction of products which is causing all of this. And and I think that will really help things as well, if we can really help them drive these kind of more circular business models rather than the linear and really relying on overproduction to essentially power their business and make them profitable.
No, that makes a lot of sense, for sure. I completely agree. I think it's like that major cultural shift. And I do think, as we've spoken about now, it is coming a lot from, you know, Generation Alpha and Gen Z, millennials as well. I think we've been comfortable with this move to online shopping, and this means more reliance on product reviews, social media, and influencer recommendations, which we just spoke about. Like, there's such a big part for so many people to play in this shift. So how do you think resale fits into, I guess, well, we've spoken about Gen Z. Do you have an opinion about how it's affected like millennials as well as, I guess, the other generations, whether it's Generation X, the boomers? What is today's consumer, I guess, in the different segments, what do they want? Is it realistic to say that can Gen Z and Gen Alpha carry everybody, basically? And I guess millennials to an extent, but yeah, who is going to be the one that drives the change?
Really, I mean, you don't want to generalize a whole, I guess, movement or people or generation, because everyone's got their own different ways of engaging in pre-love. And I don't think it's just as easy as saying this generation does this and this generation does that. But I would say that there are some kind of underlying themes and trends whereby millennials, I think, and potentially boomers are very interested in convenience. And whether that be through high street shopping for the likes of the boomers or mainly millennials, it's the online shopping which they're engaging with. You know, they want to find something as quickly as possible. They want to have recommendations. They want to see, product reviews to understand, the trust and the reliability of what they're buying as well. I think Gen Z, they're a lot more interested in community and how they can use shopping as a way of building relationships with their friends. And that's why like all of these pop-ups you see on like the high street and like vintage shopping and charity shopping, like, is such a big thing for them, because they're using it as a way of A, creating content for themselves, especially on TikTok, but also as a way of connecting with their friends and doing something that binds them together in a way that is, and also just like highlighting to everyone else that this is their identity, that they care about buying pre-love because they care about being more conscious, but they also like finding new treasures. They like being unique. They like showing their own personal style. And I think like the individuality is such a big part for Gen Z, whereas I think millennials kind of they're probably tying it a lot more to potentially influencers and looking for very specific things and trying to find the quickest route to getting there. But again, like it's so hard to tie it down just to generations. But I think those are a lot of the trends that I'm seeing. And even from like the whole clothes swapping thing I did, like that was such a community thing. And we saw a lot of, I got 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds coming to these swaps, without their parents. And I think like those sort of younger consumers, and it's just been really exciting to see how they kind of are shopping and how that will potentially change things moving forward, even for the new generations coming below them. So I think there's definitely positive trends coming about. And I think also with resale, it's been really interesting, again, kind of what I touched upon, that a lot of the time, obviously, younger people are engaging in secondhand and resale platforms. But again, this is where we really see the opportunity. If we go through the brands, can we get slightly older generations to engage in pre-love by making it super easy for them? Literally sending them an email. Do you want to resell your item that you've had for 12 months? Here's a link to the item in your digital wardrobe on the platform. Here's the listing. All you have to do is put in the price and the shipping information, there it goes, like it's done, and my mum doesn't engage in Vinted because she doesn't know how it works. So how can we make it more accessible to everyone, basically? And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned mums and their shopping ways. I agree. I think a lot of people actually want to buy in, they want to do this, but maybe they just are intimidated or they don't know even that it's possible. So I think that's a really good point. And it is super exciting to see these really young people, 15, 14-year-olds, to see them caring about this, even if it's for the community. I think there is still an element of them caring about the earth. because, you know, there's so much going on. But before I get to that, I wanted to ask you about continuous technology and how it differs from similar marketplaces. What impact will it have on the brands that you partner with?
To for like an overview of it, and like I mentioned, so very much trying to appeal to the smaller, medium-sized businesses out there. So our marketplace is essentially very light touch for the brands. It's a one-click integration with all the major e-commerce platforms out there. And again, appealing to them because a lot of these kind of SME brands, they haven't got massive development teams. They haven't got loads of budget to put towards or resources and team members to put towards building out these resale marketplaces and shifting away their attention from, you know, business as usual. So one-click integration, we have, it's like a platform in itself. So we connect to their Shopify platforms. There's no like crazy integration, and we can basically get the marketplaces set up in a week if we want to, excluding like all the promotions we want to do around launching. But it really is moving towards becoming a lot more turnkey, and our mission and I guess vision as well is to make this so turnkey that if a brand wants to set up their own marketplace, they can literally do it all themselves. There'll be a platform out there where they'll be able to sign in, they'll be able to customize it however they like, they'll have all of the email automations that they need in order for it to work, and they can just like click it live and it goes live, and it's just that easy. And I think it should become that turnkey, because we're getting a lot of like even startup brands coming to us saying that they want to integrate resale into their business from the very outset, which is just really fascinating to me that they're thinking about this and seeing this as a way of bulletproofing their business from the get-go and a way of also standing out from the crowd. But like I mentioned, it's peer-to-peer completely. So again, it's very different to other models out there, because a lot of other, I guess, players in the space are trying to do everything for the brands. So they'll offer take-back schemes, they'll offer, you know, they might offer peer-to-peer, but a lot of it is offering more of a consultancy approach, whereby we're saying, well, we know that customers are engaging peer-to-peer. We know that's the easiest way for the brands to get involved. How can we build out this product so it works both for customers and for the brands themselves? And it's just like the easiest way for them to engage. And when we speak to brands, like literally the conversation goes, yeah, this is exactly perfect for what we need, because I haven't got a whole team that can manage all the logistics behind getting people to send back things to our warehouse and refurbishing them and doing everything around that. And there's so many overheads that come with that, and the cost just starts soaring, and that's just not what the brands want. So we're really, really focused on peer-to-peer and just doing that basically the best we can and being just like experts in that space. A big differentiator as well is we have this whole marketplace engine built into the back of the marketplace, which is basically automating all of the communications between, well, basically to drive supply and demand in the marketplace. So I kind of alluded to it earlier, but we can essentially, because we know what's in people's wardrobes, right? Like, because we have all the information from the brand, we have all of their data about all their order history. So we can prompt people to sell their items more than obviously any of the other platforms like Vinted or Depop can do. So for example, I say to a customer, hey, like, I've seen that you've owned your item for 12 months. Here's a link to your digital wardrobe. You can sell it within a few clicks. Or, hey, we've seen that people are looking for the item that you've owned for 2 years. Do you want to resell it? Like, there's so many ways that we can matchmake as well. And I think that's really exciting in a way that we basically want to use the product to do all the work for the brand. Like, we want it to drive the marketplace forward. We want to drive the engagement just through all of this automation so that they can just click it live and it's working. And the brand can really focus on all the marketing aspects around it that is more like around the brand messaging and kind of like how they want to incorporate it into storytelling. And there's so much also like user-generated content that they can drive from pre-loved and you know, showing customers loving their pre-loved bag or their pre-loved jumper that they bought from the brand's marketplace and creating that real good feel factor. So so yeah, that's what we're really excited building out. And again, like how I mentioned, it's all about like the whole retention piece and how we can re-engage customers that haven't engaged in a while. For example, if a customer bought something from you 12 months ago or longer than that, we can say to them, hey, saw you had your item, do you want to resell it, here's store credit, spend on something else, etc. So it's really bringing back people into the fold, and I think that's just like the number one aim for the brands at the moment. So really excited about that. And obviously, like, selling the sample stock, as I mentioned before, people making offers and the whole offer technology is obviously, like, really impactful. And yeah, we just want to facilitate all these conversations and really pull out interesting data. I mean, like, for me, what I would really want to start diving into is, like, the reason why people are selling their items and when they're selling their items as well. Like, what is the meaning? And you know, can we pull out information about their descriptions? Like, oh, I'm reselling this because it was too big for me, or the sizing was, like, not what I thought it would be, or it, you know, like, it, a hole was in it within a year. Like, how can the brands utilize that data to actually improve their operations and to improve their design patterns and operations too? So I think we're in early in our journey, but there's so much that we can do with it. And I think, like, the first step is really just making sure that these marketplaces are working by themselves, and then really, like, kind of diving deeper in the data and the ways that we can use it in order to help the brand's business grow.
Data is golden these days. Like you said, it really can play such a big role in how the brands will, I guess, grow in the next 10 years, because they can use that to re-implement into their designs. And I think it's so powerful. No, absolutely. No, that's really, really interesting from the technology side. And I want to get your perspective, zooming out a bit, on the greater future for sustainable fashion. And how we get there from a pragmatic perspective. You've spoken a bit about it, obviously, with the platform that Continue is building, with this, the data that's, like we just said, so powerful. So how much does resale form a part of the bigger picture? And along with that, can you share anything that Continue is going to be working on to further your vision of this future of sustainable fashion?
Yeah, in terms of the future of Continue, so yeah, like I mentioned, we're launching, we've signed 14 brands, and the really exciting part is obviously building out the product and really driving forward with that innovation. But we're working with a lot of a big variety of brands, actually. So we're working with bridal brand, kids wear brand, we're just onboarded our first ski wear brand, kids wear. Like, there's so many different areas of the fashion industry that a lot of people don't even think of. They think of the traditional kind of women's wear, men's wear, but there's just so much opportunity for pre-loved in every facet of it. And I'm really excited about diving into the different segments and really, yeah, driving change across the board. And and yeah, so really excited about that, particularly actually bridal. Bridal's like a massive growth market for us. So yeah, just continue signing brands and driving home the product. And yeah, got some cool partnerships coming up too, and working across the kind of e-commerce landscape to really kind of, yeah, help brands to drive growth, but also in a sustainable way. So that's kind of our where we're going currently. Obviously, like the circular business models of resale, repair, swapping, even, like, that is a portion, like, actually just like a fraction of this whole ecosystem and what actually needs to happen in order to drive change. I mean, from the resale perspective, businesses overall, they care about being profitable, they care about growing. And again, part of our mission is really, how can we enable brands to continue to meet those targets and to meet their goals and ambitions, whilst also having resale as part of that picture? And how can we make it so resale is adding to the business in a positive way financially rather than draining the business? And that is just like a big no-no. Like, most of these brands, especially working for the SME brands, like, they can't afford to add another cost to the business. Like, this needs to make sense from day one from a cost perspective. So I think enabling brands to continue to do well is such an important thing, but also, like, how can we help them do well whilst also becoming more circular and reducing how much they're making and actually just really changing up their whole business model to align with where we need to get to in terms of meeting net zero and just fighting all of the waste that's being produced in this industry, which is just, like, appalling at the moment. Obviously, like, businesses a lot of the time won't do this by themselves. They need pushes along the way. There's legislation coming in from the government across the EU, also in the US, where, you know, producers need to take accountability for the products that they're creating, you know, France has banned fast fashion. There's more and more rules and laws coming in, which is going to definitely help. But, you know, it does take a while for these to come into force. So it's really down to the businesses and their leaders to drive change now when we really need it. So, and then I guess like consumers as well. I mean, they can do their part, and consumers have never had a bigger voice and on social media and TikTok, where they can literally call out brands and talk about what they're buying pre-loved and how they're upcycling their clothes and what they're doing to be more conscious. So I think like that does really help from a cultural perspective as well. But I think like at the moment it's the cultural shift away from, you know, just buying and that kind of overconsumption, and how can we help people to buy better and buy less. And I think that it's going to really drive change too. So, and also like recycling, I don't know how much you know, but like kind of recycling textiles, but at the moment it's really tricky. I think only about 1% of textiles actually gets recycled at the moment, because they basically kind of mesh all the fabrics together in terms of the material. So it's basically very hard to separate those and actually recycle polyester or recycle cotton, because they're just making a blend, which makes things a lot harder. So there's a lot of new exciting businesses who are launching this space and really working hard to change that, and I'm really excited about that technology as well. And I think the governments need to do a lot more to support those types of businesses, given like the overheads that they do have, being so kind of labor intensive. And so there's a lot of different areas, and it's going to take a lot of effort and work to get to where we need to be, but it's going to have to come from all three elements. So yeah, businesses, government, and consumers as well. And fingers crossed we can get there in time, basically.
Yeah, exactly. We speak to a lot of recycling business, well, not a lot because there aren't so many, but we've spoken to Sire and Reju, who I'm sure you've heard of. They are just really, they're doing their best. Like you said, it's from everybody. And those in particular, like, they are really trying to scale their efforts. And every founder that I actually speak to, they're like, we have to do this so fast. Like you as well, you know, it's so urgent, the tremendous problem. But thank goodness we have these businesses in the sustainability and technology space. And I do feel optimistic we're going to get there. I just also hope that it's sooner than later. Lydia, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emma. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode with Continue and my discussion with Lydia. Be sure to give the company a follow on their social media platforms and look out for some exciting partnerships and developments in their pipeline. There are many more exciting guests in our podcast pipeline, so make sure you subscribe to The Interline wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a follow on LinkedIn and Instagram. Also, be sure to visit The Interline's website and read our recently released 2024 Sustainability Report for more on how circularity is influencing not just environmental impact, but the future of fashion skills. The report is completely ungated and free to read, and is essential reading for all fashion professionals wanting to understand the developing role that technology solutions are playing in changing the sustainability profile of fashion, and how the fashion industry still has to travel quite a long way. And lastly, make sure you're subscribed to our weekly newsletter, where we give you our analysis into the biggest stories of the week in the world of fashion technology. Thanks for listening. Bye.